What you are about to hear, the views and opinions expressed on the Philip D. Blackman Show do not reflect the views of this station. You have been warned.
I'm former Vice President Joe Biden. The Philip D. Blackman Show is going to kick me in the nuts tonight because I suck as a president. Enjoy the show as I try to remember who shit in my pants.
It's Friday! Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Philip D. Blackman, host of the Philip D. Blackman Show. Join me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday right here at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. But in the meantime, friends, buckle up, get your mind right, and get ready for the fastest hour in radio. Thank you for tuning in. Let's get it started.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hey, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Philip D. Blackman Show. I'm your host, Philip Blackman, and welcome to the fastest hour on radio. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, I've been doing some thinking, been doing some soul searching because, you know, that's what we do when we get ready to produce shows like this. You know, we always want to make sure that we're on the right side of history. You know, I always tell people that it is much better to report the news and be right than to report the news and be first. And, you know, that's kind of the that's kind of the crux for me. You know, because one of the scariest things that I think I've recognized is what's going on in our country, what's going on in our society, what's going on with our federal government is, man, they always want to be the one to rescue you, right? They want to bail you out from your own mistakes. They want to make these decisions for your own good, which got me thinking. You know, we got the local governments, we got the state governments, we got the federal governments. But ladies and gentlemen, I believe that we have, right now we are in history, right now we have a new kind of government. We have the super government, right? I mean, at a press conference, and I want you to think about this. At a press conference on August the 12th, 1986, President Ronald Reagan said the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, "I am from the government and I'm here to help." You know, this week's news, it's been dominated by Joe Biden. You know, when he announced a federal student loan relief plan that, you know, really once again has voters divided along their political lines. And it's quite sad because people are tearing themselves apart. You know, we're also going to be examining what we know and what we don't know about this plan, this student debt relief. We're also going to be talking about the ongoing saga of Texas versus the federal government surrounding the abortion rights here in Texas. I mean, there's been some really interesting developments this week that's sure to keep the fight ongoing. And lastly, in our final segment, we're going to be looking at the origins of a saying that really some may actually call as foul. So ladies and gentlemen, as always, we are live. We're broadcasting all over our social media platforms right here at Facebook at, you know, the Philip D. Blackman Show. Same thing for YouTube, same thing for Twitter, Twitch, and even LinkedIn. We're live right now on LinkedIn, pushing out, trying to bring together a program that's going to, I don't know, I guess, try to rally us together. Now look, guys, if you want to leave a comment or to participate in any way, you know, I recommend social media as your best options. Now, we are broadcasting to our affiliates across the radio waves right now. So, guys, thank you so much for carrying the Philip D. Blackman Show. If you want to comment, you want to participate, hey, 409-245-9753 is the way to call. You can text that number, or you can jump on the social media platforms that I've just given you, and you can participate as well. Again, from my listeners across the airwaves, that is 409-245-9753. So to all my listeners across the nation, around the globe, man, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode, man. Episode number 280. This is the media mashup, the government to the rescue. Now, so for my first-time listeners, before we get too crazy, you know, for my first-time listeners, we've dedicated the opening segment of each show, and we call it End of Watch. Now, this right here, this is our way of honoring the men and women in the law enforcement community who have died in the line of duty. Yeah, as of this show, we've lost 167 officers, which means we picked up two since our last show on Wednesday. And that's according to the Officer Down Memorial page. And you know, we support our law enforcement. We appreciate their decision to step into a thankless job. On the website, it even says a statement that, and I don't imagine anybody can disagree, but the statement says that when a police officer is killed, it's not just an agency that loses an officer, it is an entire nation. We honor all of our officers who serve and who have given their life in service to their community and their country. We highlight a different officer every week, beginning with our Monday show. And this week, friends, on this Friday episode, we're going to be wrapping up covering down on Washington County PA's Sheriff's Office Corporal Chad M. Beatty in this opening segment. End of watch.
The Philip D. Blackman Show proudly salutes Corporal Chad M. Beatty, 45, of the Washington County Sheriff's Office in Pennsylvania, who died on August 10, 2022, when he suffered a heart attack after a foot pursuit of a fleeing subject. Corporal Beatty served his department for 20 honorable years and spent most of that time working in the fugitive unit. The WCSO released a statement saying, "The entire Washington County Sheriff's Office expresses its deepest sympathies to Corporal Beatty's family and friends on the loss of a friend and colleague. Corporal Beatty is survived by his son and parents to carry on his legacy. On behalf of the Philip D. Blackman Show and a grateful nation, thank you for your service, Corporal Beatty." Washington County, Pennsylvania, Corporal Chad M. Beatty. End of watch, August 10th, 2022. Rest in peace, sir.
We are proudly sponsored by One of a Kind Art 43, created by professional artist Tammy Blackman. Tammy offers free consultations and will customize your art piece to fit your needs. Each of her pieces are, as the name suggests, is one of a kind because each are personalized pieces, and once she is done, there will never be another. If you are interested, go visit Tammy on her social media pages, Facebook and TikTok, by searching One of a Kind Art 43, where Tammy broadcasts her work and she's making custom tumblers or canvas art for another satisfied customer. You can always reach out to Tammy through her email at oneofakindart43@gmail.com or call 409-234-5156. Although the prices vary, the quality is unmatched. Again, her social media pages are one of a kind with underscores between each word, followed by the word art and the number 43. Thank you again, Tammy, for another presence on this show.
I can't believe it. It's my first blind date.
Oh, I do it all the time.
Really? Woo! Woo! You guys meet? Greg, Janice?
We sure did.
That was stupid.
Great.
This is Smart, a beeper service for just $1.99 a month. From who else? Smart Beep. Call 1-800-BEEP-199 for other smart stuff, like directions.
We've got chemistry here. You feel it?
I felt it.
All right, Janice.
If you've been living under a rock or only getting on social media to catch the Philip D. Blackman Show, which, by the way, thank you all for tuning in. Happy Friday. Hope your week is well. And we're hopefully, and if you can stick around with me to the end of the show, hopefully I'm going to wrap this show up with something that with a lighter mood to make everyone feel just a little bit better. But if you have been living under that rock and you haven't been on social media, there have been some huge breaking news that's dominated the headlines. It's dominated the news feeds and social media chatter all week long. None, however, have created the discord more than Joe Biden's student debt relief. Man, I have seen faces melt off and friendships end this week over something that really truly doesn't matter in the long run. I mean, if a friendship can end with something over so stupid as politics, then I guess it's fair to argue that it was a pretty weak friendship to begin with, but that's not the point of tonight's show. The point is, however, Everyone feels a special kind of way about Joe Biden's student loan forgiveness. Those who had to pay back their debts with no help from the government, they feel like that they should be reimbursed. Those who are in debt, not all, but those who are in debt from college, from student loans, they're welcoming this news as a form of relief, especially in the light of the inflation that's going on in our country. But lastly, those who didn't go to college or who didn't accrue any debt at all by participating in the farce of higher education, they feel cheated. Because now they are owners of a student debt that they had no interest in or no benefit from and no desire to participate in. But now, today, they are all, we all, ladies and gentlemen, are brand new owners of a debt that we didn't ask for, nor did we want. Joe Biden even declared Wednesday that the COVID-19 measures that we have in place, it provides a legal basis for wiping out millions of people's student loan debt to the tune of somewhere around hundreds of billions with a B dollars. Anyone making under $125,000 a year is going to be eligible for the student loan forgiveness program, which will allow the erasure up to $10,000 to $20,000 in debt per person, depending on where your financial bracket is. And any way you look at it, this is a bad move, and this is where we're going to jump into it in our segment, The Breakdown. And right there it is, man. Tammy Blackman in the chat, she writes that, "I feel like I just acquired a school loan, only I haven't gone to school." And that's kind of, and Tammy, you're not alone. And I know you've been paying attention to the social media feeds and the conversations among everyone, and a lot of people are in your boat. But you know, here's the thing. There's a lot of different reasons why people are very wary of over all this, right? Such as the legal reasons to be wary. Now, such a huge undertaking as this student debt relief program, it would typically be for something set out in legislation that is approved by Congress. Now, Biden's basis for saying that the executive branch has the right to simply declare student loans forgiven is both egregious in its own right, and it's troubling for the future of executive power plays from here forward. Now, one of the things that I wanted to see, right, because there's always some, if you're going to make a statement like that, then you better back it up. Okay, well, I think I can. So where I'm going to back it up is Article 1, Section 9, Clause 7, which is the Appropriations Clause of the U.S. Constitution, specifically says, quote, "No money shall be drawn from the Treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law, and a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time." That's directly out of the Constitution. That's what it says. And yet, without any legislation, Joe Biden has promised to cancel up to $10,000 in student loans per borrower. Now, $20,000 for Pell Grant borrowers, and it's limited to those with annual incomes of less than $125,000. Now, this argument, it's supported, I suppose, by the fact that the current Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, she even agreed that the President of the United States does not have the authority. Here's a minute 9 video for you.
People think that the President of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. He does not. He can postpone, he can delay, but he does not have that power. That has to be an act of Congress. And I don't even like forgiveness, because that implies a transgression. It's not to be forgiven. Just freeing people from those obligations. So the question of who gets forgiven, to use the term of art that is out there, is a debate. Do we use whatever money there is for the broadest base of support of those with more people with even less debt, or fewer people with more debt? That's a policy discussion. But the difference between the president,
here it is,
the president can't do it. So that's not even a discussion. That not everybody realizes that, but the president can only postpone, delay, but not for.
Isn't that something? Nancy Pelosi said, and Tammy says right here, is Nancy sober? Why is she telling the truth like that? I think it's a Freudian slip. You know, and that's kind of the problem, right? She even said the president of the United States doesn't have that ability or doesn't have the authority. But yet, here we are. Once again, President Joe Biden is very adamant about chipping away at our Constitution for what? Can anybody guess what's happening in less than in around 80 days? That's right, ladies and gentlemen. This is a 100% political ploy, and I'll get into that argument here momentarily. But I wanted to talk about some of the other reasons why people need to why there are reasons to be wary. All right, and you know, let's talk about the pragmatic side of it. The whole claim here is that higher education has grown too expensive. Absolutely. But to simply write off existing student loan debt without really addressing the source of the fast rise in college prices, which, by the way, has a lot to do with the federal student loan program existing. It only ensures the ongoing problem. You're not fixing it. You know, I tell people all the time, especially when you're talking about dealing with the government and insurance, I believe all this stuff is a fraud. I think it's a farce. And the reason why is because if they know that that an organization is going to foot whatever bill that they have to, they're going to pay for it financially. The government, only in the government have I seen the United States Department of Defense pay $80 for a BS claw hammer, right? They can charge that much because they know they're going to get paid that much because the government don't give a crap. They're just going to continue to stroke those checks. And that's why this is not really going to fix anything. It's why it's not going to change anything. That's why it's not going to fix the problem. It's just putting a Band-Aid over it. I mean, both college tuition and student loan debt, they are right now higher than they've ever been. In the past 10 years, and we're looking at from 2008 to 2018, tuition fees have increased by a shocking 36%. Now, while inflation, of course, still exists in the same time period, the median income, the median household income, it only increased by mere 2.1%. So why is college so expensive? Yeah, I think this is going to be explained for a variety of reasons, you know, including a significant increase in demand, right? I remember when I was growing up, you know, kind of dating myself here. When I was growing up, it was an associate's degree to get a good job, and then it was a bachelor's degree to get a good job, and now it's a master's degree, and you know, and so we're increasing the. There is a huge demand. People want to step out there. They want to get those good paying jobs, those good positions. So absolutely, they don't give a. And they typically don't care what your degree plans in as long as you have a degree. So that increases the demand for these good jobs. There's a whole lot more people wanting to attend college for these jobs. And with such a competitive market, some colleges, they raise their prices to create this false perception of quality. Well, if it costs more, then that means you're getting a better education. No. But there's other factors that include an increase in financial aid, a lack of funding from the state, increased student services, and last but not least, an increased need for faculty as well as the need to pay them higher salaries. The hefty cost of college today has made obtaining a degree far less beneficial than it once was a decade ago, which is why you're seeing this great big push for trade school. It's cheaper, it's more efficient, and actually it prepares you more for the job that you need. I mean, when you have to take an elective like underwater basket weaving when you have an accounting degree, what does basket weaving have to do with it? Now, look, I'm aware that's not a real college course that I'm aware of, but you get my point. You know, past generations were able to pay for college themselves, you know, with the hard-earned money that they made by working, you know, over summer breaks. You know, those that came from more well-off families, they were able to help their children pay for their education. But what about those that didn't come from well-off families, right? Who is helping them? I mean, in the past few decades, public funding was severely cut, forcing colleges to raise their fees. And in turn, it's leaving students with no choice but to take out these hefty loans. And the rest, it's history. All right, so Roxanne Kirby says in the chat, she says, some of the left are now saying that the debt forgiveness is just reparations for white people. Good God, she says, give me a break. I'm forced to pay for someone else's college degree. It's not me freeing me from debt, or it's not freeing me from debt, like Crazy Nancy says. I'm damned if I do, and I'm damned if I don't. Roxanne, there's a lot of people who feel the exact same way. Tammy chimes in. She says, this administration is trying to buy votes. Ding, ding, ding. Absolutely, Tammy. That is the reason right there. And of course, Roxanne goes on to chime in. She says the government has no money. It's hardworking taxpayers' money. Well, but the thing is the government has the ability to flood the market with printed money that really means nothing, which by creating all this high income, by doing these type of things that they're doing, what they're doing, this is kind of the problem with the inflation. We got too much money out there because the government believes they can continue to press money and print money at will. And they think it's valuable, that they think it holds the same value, and that's just unfortunately not true. So again, friends, if you want to join the conversation, 409-245-9753. Guys, so now let's get to the economics of it, right? So this whole loan forgiveness, it may, theoretically, it could encourage that reckless borrowing, right? Because people typically who are in debt, once they get that money back, or once they're no longer having to pay that money, they got to do something with that chunk of change, no matter how big it is. So chances are they're going to spend it on something they don't need. I mean, if today's college students think they won't actually have to pay back their loans, then what is the point of having, what is the idea behind it? This reckless borrowing, in turn, it leads to even higher college tuition rates. And it could also be inflationary more generally by freeing up income for tons of people who may then drive up the demand for goods and right along with it, the prices. So this whole idea of forgiving student loan balances would immediately impact the borrowers, but it's going to have a long-term impact on the taxpayers themselves, you and me. Now, some experts and civilians have expressed their concern by that forgiving student loan debt may actually worsen an already record high inflation, with Democrats worrying about the impact this could have about 80 days from now. Now, on Wednesday, the former chairman of Barack Obama's Council of Economic Advisors, his name is James Furman, he called Biden's decision gasoline on an inflationary fire. He says, quote, pouring roughly $500 billion of gasoline on the inflationary fire that is already burning is reckless. He said, doing it going well beyond one campaign promise, $10,000 of student loan relief and breaking another, all proposals paid for, it's even worse. Now, Andrew Luntz, he's the director of federal policy of the National Taxpayers Union. He published an estimate on Tuesday that found that Joe Biden's plan could cost the average taxpayer about $2,000 based on the $10,000 forgiveness per student loan borrow that has been touted. Now, this is based on the assumption that policymakers would need to make up for the total cost of forgiveness through tax increases, spending cuts, borrowing, or a combination of strategies. The National Taxpayers Union, it estimates that the cost of taxpayer, it's based on data from Penn Wharton budget model, which found that the total cost of the proposal could be about $329.1 billion over 10 years. Have you noticed our government, when they do these big bills, they say, well, it's going to cost these many billions of dollars over 10 years, and everybody's like, oh, it's just 10 years down. No, it's not 10 years down the day. It's starting right now for the next 10 years. And again, it's based on that $10,000 forgiveness of borrowers less than $125,000 of income. Now, based on a total of under 158 million taxpayers in 2019, that works out to about $2,085.59 that we are going to have to pick up the tab in additional taxes. Now, the Penn Wharton estimate is definitely going to increase based on Pell Grant income repayment features announced by Biden on Wednesday. Now, Wharton professor Ken Smetters, he also said that this actually $326 billion is on the low end. It's probably going to be closer to about $700 billion. That's the problem, right? How do we not see that as a problem? You'd think that the Congressional Budget Office, and this one right here blew me away, the Congressional Budget Office, they, as of right now, as of this show, they have yet to evaluate the total cost of this policy, of this idea. Now, call me crazy. Maybe it's my poor way of looking at things. But you would think that would be the first step before making any kind of announcement, finding out how much it costs and if we could even afford it, like most Americans who don't really have a checkbook with unlimited funds like the super government, right? There's also more reasons that we got to be wary, right? The program amounts to a massive subsidy for middle-class Americans as opposed to benefiting the most economically downtrodden and financially strapped. They always talk about how our minority community are getting kicked in the dick over and over, but this right here doesn't help them. This only helps middle America. It provides a handout to many people for whom the loan payments aren't a problem right now. I mean, someone making $125,000 a year, they can surely afford a few hundred dollars a month. Or it won't be in the very near future, for instance, a doctor or a lawyer are on the verge of making big bucks who hasn't quite gotten there yet. I mean, in short, the program, it consumes resources that would be better used to helping those who did not, for whatever reason, have a chance to attend college. But one of the biggest reasons that I'm gaining that people seem to be opposed is that it offends people's basic sense of fairness. I mean, certainly not everybody who had to take out a student loan was lazy or irresponsible or anything of the sort. And not everyone without a student loan is responsible or hardworking. Many of them just really lucked into having parents who could afford to pay for college, and let's just be honest. But there's a lot of people, many people, who avoiding student loan debt or paying it off promptly meant making all sorts of sacrifices in their life. Biden's loan forgiveness program, it says to them that this thrift, this practicality, etc., whatever you want to call it, it may have been for nothing. And the last reason has taken the beating from folks who approve of Joe Biden's student loan plan, and they're taking aim at its critics. The uncharitable summary of it is that people who suffered in avoiding or paying off student loans, they just want to suffer, they want other people to suffer too. And the implication of this line of criticism that opponents of student loan forgiveness are just, they're kind of assholes, you know, twirling their mustaches and shouting, pull yourselves up by your bootstraps at people drowning in debt. That's not true. I saw an argument this morning that actually cited Social Security benefits as a comparison to what we're going through right now, that any new entitlement program, it's going to benefit people while leaving others out who may have benefited had it been enacted sooner. For instance, someone in his 70s, the argument was that when Social Security started, may have actually stopped working sooner had it been around just a few years earlier. But, you know, I don't think this comparison holds up. You know, older workers, you know, since older workers excluded from a few extra years of retirement, they weren't put at a professional disadvantage relative to their peers. And the same can't be said for student loan forgiveness. And this gets to the crux of the fairness factor here, I think. You know, it's not just that some people made certain sacrifices, like working more hours as a student or living with parents instead of in a dorm that made college experience less fun. Many of the things they gave up, you know, or they gave up may actually put them at a long-term professional disadvantage relative to those who made the different decisions regarding their loans. You know, choosing to go to less prestigious school, you know, foregoing unpaid or low-paid internships and fellowships in favor of working jobs that pay better in the short term but provide less long-term advantage. Working for pay instead of spending more time on personal projects or resources related to one's field, that is a sacrifice. You know, living in a cheaper city after graduation or taking a more lucrative but less elite job right out of school. You know, it's decisions like these that may have helped people avoid some student loan debt or pay off their debts more quickly, but it cost them other important things. The right lines on their early career resumes, network opportunities, professional contacts, etc. You know, and this could actually, I believe this could have a long-term effect on their professional opportunities and their earnings because they're behind the curve. But meanwhile, they're competing for work with people who maybe did the right internships or went to a better school because of student loans. It's just not that the latter group may have had more fun or made decisions deemed by less responsible people. There's your air quotes for the show. And that's arguable, by the way, considering the advantage these decisions have conferred. But it's that a lot of them may have a lifelong professional advantage over the former. Perhaps the fact that they incurred loan debt mitigated this somewhat, but not anymore. Never mind that these advantages may even make them better positioned to pay off their student loan debts. None of this may change anyone's mind. I understand that. This may not change anyone's calculation about whether erasing a student loan debt's ultimately good or bad policy. Time will be what decides. But maybe it'll help people think twice before acting as if the trade-offs in this calculation are all frivolous and anyone upset by them just simply wants people to suffer. But we need to be honest in our assessment of this executive order. As Daryl Hassani pointed out in his article, Biden's student loan forgiveness is unjust, cynical abuse of power. Biden is not canceling or forgiving any student loans. Let's just make that very clear. These are preposterous euphemisms as favored by Democrats and the drive-by media. The debt in question, guys, it already exists. It has been lent, it has been spent, and those who borrowed the money of their own volition have already received the services. This debt is not cancelable. The president hasn't forgiven loans. He's unilaterally broken existing contracts and transferred the responsibility of payment to taxpayers. Many of those people who have either repaid their own student loans or never borrowed any money to begin with. Now, if you're opposed to repaying some stranger's loan, that's just too bad. Because there's a whole new batch, 87,000 IRS agents who's going to be there to make sure that you and I do pay that debt. It should also be stressed that capping loan forgiveness to those making under $125,000, it means absolutely nothing because most borrowers at the beginning of their careers have yet to enjoy the durable benefits of a college degree. The average worker with a bachelor's degree ends up making on average $1 million in their careers, $1 million or more, I should say. Those with graduate degrees, about $2 to $3 million more than a worker, I suppose, that would have a high school diploma. But yet, the Biden administration is going to compel truck drivers and clerks without college degrees to pay the loans of white-collar workers on their way to a six-figure salary. Now, of course, even if the student loan forgiveness was a boon for the poor, it would still be completely unconstitutional, as I told you earlier. It's a moral hazard, it's counterproductive, and it's fundamentally unjust. But Joe Biden's plan, which is going to cost the taxpayers, again, between $300 and $700 billion, more than all the illusionary savings that were going to be found in the Inflation Reduction Act, is little more than a vote-buying scheme for affluent millennials. Let's just be honest. There already exists a slate of programs that help the poor pay for college. And most schools charge families of the lower economic quality or quantities less. According to a University of Pennsylvania study, between 69 and 73% of the debt forgiven accrues to households in the top 60% of the income distribution. Another Brookings study found that 60% of all outstanding school loans debt was taken by families making over $74,000, those borrowers making about 75% of all their payments. The lowest income, 40% of households hold just under 20% of the outstanding debt and only make about 10% of the payments. By the way, though there's clearly a problem with spiking higher education costs, there's this myth that most students who graduate with a bachelor's degree are facing a debilitating debt. That is factually, statistically, empirically false. According to Brookings, around 30% of undergrads graduate with zero debt. 25% graduate with less than $20,000. Only 6% of graduates owe more than $100,000, period. Only 6%. Half of all college debt is held by a quarter of the borrowers, those who go to graduate school, which is to say Biden, he's compelling American taxpayers to foot the bill for graduate degrees. The government's guaranteeing of student loans was one of the most corrosive policy ideas in recent history. It has incentivized schools to charge outrageous tuitions. Yale and Harvard now basically function as hedge funds with massive endowments. It's encouraged students to rack up massive debt, getting often useless degrees, gender studies, if you will. I mean, there's no bank on earth that would lend a kid $100,000 to get a degree in gender studies or, I don't know, let's say journalism. And it's allowed banks to hand out these giant loans without any concern because they know they're going to get paid. This loan forgiveness, which really is sure to become an expectation moving forward, it only exacerbates all these problems. You know, not too long ago, Joe Biden admitted, he admitted that he didn't have the authority to cancel student loans by signing with a pen. But he did it anyway, right before the midterms. This administration is rationalizing that it's power grab on the feeble idea that we are in a national emergency over COVID. I'm so sick of hearing about all this stuff that's being done because of COVID. It's disgusting. COVID is a red herring. You know, part of me suspects that this administration understands that the president can't forgive debt and that the effort will only be stymied by a Supreme Court that adheres to the Constitution. You know, Democrats likely see this issue as a cudgel that they can use to further delegitimize the Supreme Court and hit Republicans as opposing the aid of the middle class. There's no norm this administration isn't willing to cynically destroy for political power. This is purely a political move used to bribe voters for their votes. And once someone finds standing to take this to the Supreme Court of the United States, I'd be very surprised to see the decision remain in effect. But before that happens, the midterms will have come and gone and the political damage will have already been done. And that is the breakdown. All right, so I'm going to get to, want to try to knock out some of the, okay, so Roxanne Kirby says, take the money back from the colleges. Man, there you go. That's a great idea. She says, make the colleges forgive the debt. Hey, I could afford that. And man, I could too, because that means I don't have to spend any of my money. She says, yeah, they'll all get paid by the taxpayers. Well, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to come right around, and we're going to jump into our next story. Guys, stick around, and we'll get you guys. We'll see you guys here at the top of the hour, or in 60 seconds.
Paralyzed Veterans of America helps people with disabilities, veterans and civilians alike, regain their independence and move forward in life. Since 1946, Paralyzed Veterans of America is a leading steadfast advocate for quality health care, spinal cord research and education, veterans benefits, and civil rights for paralyzed veterans and all people with disabilities, and offers support for caregivers. PVA's mission? To empower America's brave men and women to regain what they fought for, their freedom and independence. If you are a disabled veteran seeking support, or if you are a veteran or civilian and you wish to give support, call Paralyzed Veterans of America today, toll-free, at 1-800-424-8200 or visit pva.org. That's 1-800-424-8200 or online at pva.org.
All right, friends, welcome back. Episode number 280, Media Mashup, Government to the Rescue. That's right, we're talking about the super government and how they're trying to step in and protect us all from ourselves. You know, in this abortion saga of Texas versus the world, seems like, but we'll narrow it down and call the federal government. It really seems that the developments are they're coming in by the day and with finger-pointing going back and forth. So in the most recent news, there was a federal judge in Texas that's temporarily blocked the enforcement of the Biden administration's order that required hospitals to perform abortions in medical emergencies. And he sided with the state officials who said that the federal order should not preempt Texas abortion law. The Supreme Court made it very clear. Abortion legislation should belong to the state. That was the whole idea. They didn't abolish Roe v. Wade. They just gave the responsibility back to the states where it has always belonged. So what happened? Texas sued the federal government over the order back in July. And they argued that the guidance violated the state's authority to create and enforce its own laws. So starting yesterday, 25 August, it is now illegal for doctors to perform an abortion in the state of Texas, except in rare cases where the pregnant person's life is in jeopardy. Now, in a late Tuesday order, the U.S. District Judge James Wesley Hendricks is his name. He wrote that the Biden administration, quote, lacked the statutory authority to issue its guidance on emergency abortions, and allowing federal guidance to supersede state law would cause an irreparable harm. He says that the guidance gives Texas hospitals and physicians license, much more requires them to violate Texas abortion laws if their medical judgment says an abortion is required to stabilize the patient in a situation prohibited by Texas law. He says that this harms Texas. The judge said that this harms Texas' legitimate interest in the continued enforceability of its abortion laws. So the Department of Health and Human Services, they issued a guidance back in July, you know, just weeks after the Supreme Court ruled that abortion is not a constitutional right. And of course, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, right? She called the Texas decision a blow to Texans. I would like to see where she pulled that out of, because it certainly didn't come out of her ridiculous brain. You know, she says that pregnant women in Texas may now be denied appropriate medical treatment for conditions such as a dangerously high blood pressure or severe bleeding. She said that it's wrong, it's just backwards, and women may die as a result. The fight is not over. It is over. She said that the president, she argues, that the president is going to continue to push to require hospitals to provide life-saving and health-preserving reproductive care. But that is not what's on the table here. Because there's a similar case playing out in Idaho where a federal judge suggested Monday that the state's abortion ban might violate the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. Now, a ruling in that case is expected, you know, later on next week. And the Biden administration's guidance states that emergency room doctors must perform life-saving medical care to pregnant patients who are experiencing an emergency medical condition, even if that includes an abortion, otherwise prohibited by state law. So the guidance listed an ectopic pregnancy, you know, complications of pregnancy loss or emergent hypertensive disorders as examples of a potential medical condition that may really necessitate an abortion and save these pregnant women. Well, I'm sorry, they didn't say pregnant women. I'm being honest. They said pregnant persons because apparently, you know, women now are not no longer women can't have babies. It's birthing people have babies because apparently they think trans women can have babies. I don't understand the logic, but there it is. So the Biden administration actually threatened to fine and strip Medicare statuses from hospitals that failed to follow their guidance, which was issued in the aftermath of the Supreme Court ruling. So Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, he said that the Biden administration was attempting to use federal health care regulations to transform every emergency room in the country into a walk-in abortion clinic. He's absolutely right. And the reason why is because the guidance behind forcing these hospitals to get it done, they, you know, again, this whole idea of saying my body, my choice, and it should be between a woman and her health care provider. Well, this is the government. Once again, the government is trying to interject their will. You know, Judge Hendricks, he ruled that the guidance issued under the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, it goes beyond the scope of federal law and it fails to appropriately balance the interest of a pregnant person and their unborn child. He said to the extent that the guidance would require abortion where Texas would not, Texas law does so to provide the best opportunity for an unborn child to survive. The order reads, quote, the court will not interject itself in balancing the health of an unborn child and the health of the mother when the balancing is left to the people and their elected representatives. You know, Texas has several overlapping bans on abortion, including the statute predating Roe v. Wade that criminalizes all abortions. Yesterday, the Texas abortion trigger law, it went into effect and it makes it a felony now to perform an abortion at any point during the pregnancy. In violations of the law, they are punishable by life in prison, or up to life in prison, I should say. And it also says that the Attorney General shall seek a civil penalty not less than $100,000 plus attorney's fees. Well, here is my problem with all of you. Well, y'all say it's a clump of cells. It's a mass of cells. It's not a baby. It's not alive. It's not a human. You know, the argument that I'm going to make, and I would love for someone who disagrees with me, 409-245-9753. I'd love to have this conversation with anyone willing to have it. In our criminal justice system, if a pregnant woman's life is taken, let's say I kill a pregnant woman, I'm charged with double murder, the woman and the unborn child. NASA scientists say that a clump that cells found on Mars is signs of life. But you're telling me that a child inside a woman's stomach is not alive. It's not a human. And we should have the right to abort it. I wish I could understand the logic. I've tried like hell to understand it. I've tried to wrap my mind around it. And for those of you, you know, jackwagons who want to talk about, you know, it's a religion. This has nothing to do with religion. This is 100% because I disagree. I believe that all life should be cherished. I don't care who it is. All right, so let's get to the chats here. So Rich, Big Rich says, made it. What's going on, everyone? Good to see you, my friend. Roxanne Kirby says, how about providing life-saving medical care to babies who are being aborted that just won't die like they want? She said, the God said he knew us in the womb. Well, it's amazing, Roxanne, when you try to have these religious conversations with people who don't believe in God. You might as well truly be trying to argue with a stop sign. But this abortion ban, man, it's seen some very unusual, and we called it some very unusual exploiters to the law. And again, I called it back when the SCOTUS ruling went into effect. And then I read this story right here from KXAN. It's out of Austin, Texas, with a headline that reads, I should not be running any medical facility. Man offers abortions at sea for Texas women. All right, so the article says with most abortions officially being illegal in Texas as of Thursday, women are looking for options and some are turning to the group called Abort Offshore. Now this right here, it's a for-profit organization that's taking women out on boats from the Bay of Galveston into federal water to have abortions. And this man, his name is Michael Kimbrough. He actually said that he launched abortion offshore in mid-July. He said that he has family in Texas, but he lives in New York. I tell you, it's time to send his ass back up north, but still, he says he's going back and forth between the two states. Now, Michael Kimbrough, this man on my screen, he has no medical experience. He actually confirmed it in his interview. But he said that he decided to create the business after the leak of the Supreme Court opinion that was overturned Roe v. Wade. He says, quote, "No, I should not be running any sort of medical facility. Why should women trust you?" was the follow-up question, Jayla Washington. Now, what he's doing, it makes one thing clear. Banning abortions is not going to stop women from finding ways to get them. Absolutely. But Kimbrough said it's about a 40-minute boat ride to federal waters to get women to a place where abortions may be deemed legal. Now, still, some women are willing to take the risk. He says that a Texas woman says that I cannot have a baby right now, so let's have an abortion. You know what? Here's the thing. Here's my problem with this whole argument, right? So, you know, I get it, the whole rape and incest. I get all that argument there. But the one that I don't, that I have a huge problem with, this lady, I can't have a baby right now. Well, then don't be having sex right now. I mean, son of a bitch. If you can hold this pen with your knees, you have the ability to stop having sex. You have the ability to keep from getting pregnant. I'm just saying. But cool thing is you got, there's other options. You know, if you can't have a baby, if you can't handle the responsibility of having a baby, then don't try to jump out there and try to make a baby, right? Or even if on accident. But according to Kimbrough right here, more than 200 Texas women have already gotten abortions through his for-profit organization. Now, the process, Kimbrough says, now starts with a physician referral. He says there's a number of physicians who are working with him. He says they give a code to the sonogram company that they work with, the sonogram company, then says, okay, this person is real. The reason why all these protective measures are being taken is because this is wrong, and he knows it. So to make sure that someone's not getting investigated. I mean, why he did an interview like this to say, hey, this is what I'm doing. But I guess he could, because this federal government's not going to do shit about it. We already know this. So he said that this code, right, it starts with a four-letter, and it's a four-digit code, and it gives him another unique identifier, and then he says they then text his number, and that's when they schedule him for a boat. So far, they're seeing up to 20 patients a day, charging about $1,500. Now, it sounds really covert and crazy, but unfortunately, the laws require it. So once a patient is verified, the offshore arranges a pre-boarding meeting at a hotel with what's called a patient advocate in the Galveston area. Patients are directed to leave their phones behind, and a car takes them to a rental home near the water. Then they go out on the dock and they go out onto the water. And if they bring someone for support, the person that they bring them is that brings them is not allowed on the boat, and they have to stay behind at the hotel. Kimbrough said that he spoke to someone yesterday that asked me, why would you even advertise this? And he's like, well, I wanted to see how much trouble I'd get in before really I put a lot of money into this. So what he's doing right now, he's trying to see, you know, because he knows right now he's making a lot of money. At $1,500 a drop at 200 people, the dude's making money. I mean, he admits that he's been accused of fraud multiple times, but he emphasized that he's never been convicted. The reporter asked him, you know, is this something that you're doing as another fraudulent type of deal to make money, or is this something that you're truly doing to help women? His reply is very telling. He said it's neither at this point. Like, it's hard to say. He said there's a lot of other people that are going to exploit this situation. And when he was asked, well, aren't you doing the same thing? He said, well, that's what I'm saying. So according to Kimbrough, he wanted to be the first one to exploit it. He wants what he's doing to draw attention to the lengths that women are willing to go to have abortions that are banned in Texas. Why not just save your $1,500 and go to another state that allows it where it can be done safely? Just saying. But he said that the business itself isn't profitable because operating costs are so expensive. I'm calling bullshit. But he also said that he doesn't want to keep facilitating abortions, but women are still being referred by physicians. You know, I don't want the money. I got to do it, right? He said women are still seeking his services, his business offers. It's either this or having a kid. said a Texas woman. That's is disgusting. It's either this or having a kid. Again, ladies and gentlemen, my argument is, hands down, these people, I can't have a kid right now. I don't want to have a kid right now. Whatever the reason, whatever the excuse is, ladies and gentlemen, this is dog shit. This is horrible. The idea, the notion that there are women out there who make the argument, well, I don't have time. I don't have the resources. I don't have the money. I got to worry about my career. I got to worry about my current family. Well, all that stuff is great. But at the end of the day, lady, you make the choice. I mean, when you're holding between 50 and 80 abortions a week, 8 to 20 patients a day, I mean, oh, so far he's done, he estimates about 250 abortions. This is exploitation. Where's the women groups? Where's the feminists? Where are the people who are so upset that women are being exploited? Where are they? They're nowhere to be found because of creeps like this right here. I don't understand. You got to make up your mind. Which way do you want to go? Well, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Let's see. My next break is about right at 3 minutes, which is fine because I've got some paperwork I need to take care of anyway. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm gonna take a quick 3 minute break. I've got something lined up for your entertainment. And by the way, it does give way to what we're going to be jumping into in our final segment. One final thing, guys, stick around.
I can't believe it. It's my first blind date.
Oh, I do.
Hey, time for a few fart jokes. Where would a comedy show be without a few fart jokes? Question. Do you ever have to fart on a bus or an airplane or in some public place, but you hadn't been farting all that day? So you didn't really know the nature of the beast. You only knew there was lots of it. In a situation like that, what you have to do is to release a test fart. You have to arrange to release quietly and in a carefully controlled manner about 10 to 15% of the total fart, in order to determine if those around you can handle it. Or if in fact you may be about to precipitate a public health emergency. When releasing a test fart, it is often good to engage in an act of subterfuge, such as reaching for a magazine. Say, is that Golf Digest? That doesn't smell too horrifying. In fact, in an odd way, it's rather pleasant. I think they ought to enjoy the rest of this baby. And it turns out to be one of those farts that would strip the varnish off a Foot Locker. A fart that could end a marriage. And everyone around you heads for the exits. Even the people on the airplane. As you realize, it is time to review your fiber intake. It might not be necessary, after all, each morning to eat an entire wicker swing set. I have no ending for this, so I take a small bow.
All right, friends, so to shift to a lighter side of the information that I've been putting out this episode, I wanted to shift to something just a little bit more humorous. It's Friday, right? See, I love words because I recognize how important they are. You know, contrary to political belief, words do matter. And I'm especially interested in the sayings and the understanding the origins. You know, where do they come from? How do they get to be used in our language today? So here's a little backstory. Because I'm hearing impaired, we watch television with in the Blackman house, so to speak, and with closed captions. Otherwise, I guess the reason why we do that is because the volume would be set at a level that's normally reserved for a rock concert or outdoor theaters. So last night, we were watching an episode of our favorite educational cartoon that ever existed, and it's called American Dad. In one scene, the character was talking to an old lady about her husband, Stan. And when she finished speaking, this old lady, she belched out the most watery burp you could imagine, like she did it underwater. Here's what I'm talking about.
What have I done? I ruined my marriage.
Now, I don't know if you caught it, right there at the very bottom with the closed captions on. What struck me so much about this was the how the caption identified this old lady's burp, and it said "breaking wind." Now look, when I was a kid and even as an adult, I've only heard the term of "breaking wind" to mean that somebody had farted, that somebody had floated an air biscuit, had a bottom burp or a one cheek squeak, or they cut the cheese or they squeezed the cheese, or they had a rim slide or a Bronx cheer or a turd honking for the right of way, or what we'd like to call a Joe Biden speech. You get my point. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, as the kids say in the late 1900s, more specifically around the 80s, I asked an adult what breaking wind meant, and I was told immediately to shut up. You know, kids back then were to be seen and not heard. Okay. So a year or so later, an aunt that I had was wearing a light jacket, and she called it a windbreaker. And it intrigued me because it was like breaking wind, but it was a windbreaker, which really caused some childhood confusion. I mean, I wanted to keep my cousins warm. So, you know, I positioned myself between them and the oncoming wind because even as a kid, I was bigger than everyone else. I was used to people standing in my shadow, which is how I got the early nickname Eclipse, but I digress. And when the adults that were around, they saw me standing deliberately in front of my cousins, they asked me what I was doing, and I said, "I'm breaking wind." Made sense to me. Now, several of the adults, they heard me, and they started laughing out loud, and at long last, finally someone clued me in on the real meaning of what breaking wind is. But here I am, 2022, yesterday years old, learning for the first time that burping also apparently fell into the realm of breaking wind as referenced in the closed captions. And last night, I realized that I couldn't let my day end with this lingering question, you know, where did the term breaking wind come from and how did we get here today? So I did my best. I did what I do best. I jumped in. I started doing research, and because I wanted to end this Friday show with something educational for my audience by sharing my findings. Now, although there's very limited information on the subject, which really surprised me considering the topic, apparently the expression of breaking wind has been in existence since the 1500s. I mean, lest you forbearers of uncouth lot, you know, possessing not even a sufficient decorum to be embarrassed by the word fart. I mean, allow me to point out that we've been euphemizing our flatulent language since the beginning of the 16th century. How embarrassed have we always been as a human species? I mean, for that is when we have this evidence of breaking wind. You know, among the earliest adoptions of this fine term was a man named Sir Thomas Alloyd. He is a noted lexicographer. He's a diplomat who in 1539, he combined these singularly inoffensive words as he extolled the many benefits of the radish. In his writing of Castle of Heath, he wrote that the radish roots, they have the virtue to extenuate or make thin and also to warm. They also cause to break wind and to piss. Now, in other words of the 17th century, breaking wind appeared to be referring to either belching or farting, and often break wind upward is used to signify the former. I'd never heard that a burp was called a break wind upward, but there it is. So, friends, the best information that I could find on such a funny expression is this is something that's, and truly, I challenge you, go try to find the origins of this. It's surprising how little, I don't know, maybe my old country brain has a way of thinking about funny shit that nobody else does. And, you know, so if you happen to come across any literature about where that particular saying come from, man, send it to me. I'd love to see it. But one thing that I do know is that farts stink only because deaf people need a belly laugh too. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me this Friday. That does it for me. I appreciate all of you tuning in to this show that seeks not only to provide that middle ground analysis, but to remain consistent to the inconvenient truth that so many people refuse to see. I'm from the government and I'm here to help are the most nine terrifying words that you will ever hear. And the fact that the government is trying to jump in and take over more, the more we give them, the more they're going to take. And the more that they take, the more danger we're in. We lose our freedoms. So until next time, friends, thank you so much for your service and your patriotism to this country. Without our men and women in uniform, our veteran community, and great Americans like yourself, man, our country would be a very different place. We are the only ones who stand between freedom and chaos. So as always, friends, I'm going to wrap this show up with don't let your dog tags dangle in the dirt. Stay on your feet and continue to fight that good fight against everything that's wrong. If you love your freedom, thank a veteran. If you love your peace, thank a police officer. And if you see a first responder, man, give them a high five and a handshake and tell them job well done because they are still grinding, although everybody else is going back to work. So God bless each and every one of you. God bless the United States of America. Catch me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time right here. Guys, get off social media, get off the news, get away from all that bullshit, and get back to what the things that really matter, the things you can control of, and the things you have influence over, and that is your family, your friends. You know, we've learned, you know, just here a couple of days ago, we lost a really great warfighter. We lost a, his name is Lance Keller. He's a good friend, and this year, and for those, a lot of you guys who've lost people to COVID, you know that life is not certain. So instead of spending all your time pissing and moaning and fighting with each other, man, get back to what matters, your family, your friends. Spend times with the loved ones that you hold close, because tomorrow is not guaranteed, but the taxes are always going to be. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy your weekend. I'll see you Monday, Lord willing, the creeks don't rise. My name's Philip Blackman, and I'm out of here.